Recorded live.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Talking Twilight Zone. We've been off the air for about 4 weeks, but we're back now, and we're ready to go with some great conversation and discussion today. So let's get started.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. For the next 30 minutes, we'll be talking Twilight Zone.
And now, Mr. Serling.
In the parlance of the 20th century, this is an oddball. His name is James B.W. Beavis, and his tastes lean toward stuffed animals, zither music, professional football, Charles Dickens, moose heads, carnivals, dogs, children, and young ladies. Mr. Beavis is accident-prone, a little vague, a little discombobulated, with a life that possesses all the security of a floating crap game. But this can be said of our Mr. Beavis. Without him, without his warmth, without his kindness, the world would be a considerably poorer place, albeit perhaps a little saner. Could it not be obvious by now, James B.W. Beavis is a fixture in his own private, optimistic, hopeful little world, a world which has long ceased being surprised by him. James B.W. Beavis, on whom Dame Fortune will shortly turn her back, Mr. James B.W. Beavis, just one block away from the Twilight Zone.
Orson Bean, and he stars as a character who really most people would consider a loser. He's living in an apartment that is always a shambles. It looks like a train wreck happened in that apartment. He works a job that he really hates, very eccentric. He drives an old 1924 Rickenbacker car, and he's very friendly with the neighborhood kids. He actually loves his life, even though it's really a bit of a mess. He's months behind on his rent. His landlady can't stand him. He ends up going to work one day in this little 1924 Rickenbacker that's sputting all kinds of noises and sputting fumes all over the place, and he gets to his job. And he finds out that when he gets there, his boss wants to see him, and he knows what's coming. Because if you look at this man's desk, it looks like a museum exhibit, only a very bad museum exhibit. I mean, there are all kinds of stuffed animals and little dime store novelties all over the desk. And, I mean, this is not really conducive to a workplace. I mean, everybody has little trinkets and things all over the desk at work, but, you know, this was, like, outrageous. So his boss basically tells him that he doesn't, you know, fit within the organization, and he's fired. So that's, like, the sixth job that he's lost in, I guess he said, the past year, six jobs. But he doesn't seem to learn his lesson, so his guardian angel comes down and decides to make his life better for him, which he actually does in the guardian angel's eyes. He gives him this beautiful new car, you know, very up-to-date model car. I believe it was a convertible. He actually gets him into his job, and the boss comes out and gives him a raise. Now, the only thing that bothers him is that his desk is completely clear of all his junk, and he doesn't like that. He doesn't like the fact that, you know, he's sitting at a desk that he considers to be nude. He says, this is nude. This is not right. But his boss comes out and gives him $10 a month raise, and it's just amazing that he's got a new suit. The guardian angel gave him this brand new suit, and, you know, he's just having a great life. He's not happy. And the guardian angel doesn't understand it. The guardian angel even says that he doesn't really care for him. Anyway, eventually, Beavis realizes that he can't live that way. Even though he's got a raise, he's got a great car, his landlady now likes him, the kids won't play with him anymore. He used to like to play with the kids out in the street. They won't play with him anymore, and he's just not happy. He wants his old Rickenbacker. He wants all of his crazy zither music. He likes to listen to zither music. He wants it all back. So the guardian angel gives it back to him. Now he's happy again. Oh, he's still a loser. He's got no job. He's got no place to live. But he's happy now. Yeah. Well, as far as I'm concerned, you know, I guess whatever makes you happy, but, you know, as it turned out at the end, he had no place to live, he had no job. I think I'd deal with a job that I didn't like so much if, you know, it meant having a roof over my head. I don't know. I don't know if I'm against him or for him. I really don't. But overall, I really didn't care for the episode. I thought it was just a, you know, I thought it was a useless episode to me. There was nothing much happening. You know, it was very slow moving, dragged along. And at the end, I just couldn't see why he would want to be homeless, jobless, just to keep his zither music, play a few games of football on the street with the kids, and, you know, keep his dirty old apartment. I don't know. But that's how I feel about it. So I am going to now turn this over to Ken.
Actually, I'm sorry. Can I go next? Since I'm kind of in a populated area.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. I forgot. I'm
yeah,
sorry.
I'd like to just give my opinion, and then I'll close so that to avoid any other background noises that we don't need.
Sure.
Basically, what I was going to say was that I know that most people don't really care for this episode that much. I didn't really think it was that bad. I don't have a problem necessarily with eccentric people. I mean, he seemed rather harmless. For me, where this really falls flat is that you have a guardian angel who's come down to make his life better, and instead of the guardian angel finding something that suits Mr. Beavis, he basically changes Mr. Beavis into somebody he doesn't like. It seems to me that any angel worth his salt who's trying to, say, earn his wings like Clarence did in It's a Wonderful Life, you would think that he'd want to help Beavis find a job that was more conducive to his personality. And instead, he decides to change him. I would say if the angel was really there to help him, it would have been more logical for him to find a job that better suited him and where he would be happy and where people might appreciate his eccentric behavior and his creativity. You know, because otherwise, I mean, from that standpoint, I think the guardian angel basically fell down on the job. He failed because he didn't help this guy. At the very least, you would have thought that, you know, here he is at the end of the show. He's homeless and he's unemployed and he's still driving around in a clunker car. At least make the car, give him a car that works. So that was my take on it. And on that note, I will say goodbye for now and I'll talk to you all in 2 weeks.
Okay, have a great vacation. Bye-bye.
Thanks.
Bye. Thanks, Kelly.
Hey, Ken.
Okay, you sure you want me to comment on this episode?
Oh, sure, yeah.
I got my caffeine ready, Ken, so go ahead.
All right, well, I hope all you guys are sitting down, and I hope everybody is relaxed, and I hope that what I'm about to say doesn't make you all mad at me. Now, in our book, I gave it a poor rating. I didn't give it a lousy rating. And the reason is because I've given so many lousy ratings that I just got tired of doing it. So on this episode, I'm just going to give a poor rating, just to be a nice guy, okay? Oh. Now, really, this...
Well, Ken, this is the third time you've changed your vote.
No, in the book it says one poor rating.
Well, according to what I have on the internet, you started out around 2. Then when you actually voted on the poll, you made it 0. Now you're back to 1.
Yeah, I'm all over the map.
Yeah, how about that?
But I thought I was watching the Red Skeleton Comedy Hour. You remember the Red Skeleton show? He'd come out on the stage. Yeah, he would come out. He'd kind of have that waggle walk. And then he would do his comedy routine. And, you know, the audience would laugh with every little thing that he did. You know, maybe he got his hat, he got his coat, he fixed his shoes, he got his socks, he adjusted his coat. And so everybody laughed with every single motion that Red Skeleton did.
So in other words, Ken, you're saying Mr. Beavis was Freddy the Freeloader, huh?
Well, I didn't know what I was watching, really. I know the Twilight Zone, toward the end of the season 1, is starting to get the blues, and I know their vacation time is coming. But this is really ridiculous, to come up with such a shallow script. Now, we've had the guardian angel or the angel or whatever kind of spiritual being, you know, we've had this angle before in the show. So to have back-to-back episodes is one turnoff for me, because you've only got 36 episodes in season one, so we've seen the angel do his thing. We don't need an angel again saying, all right, we'll just reverse things for you. Instead of you being a clumsy idiot, now you'll be a upstanding citizen, dressed nice, and everything works out, your job, the money, and so forth. So that turned me off. But the worst part of the episode was just the end. I mean, look at, whenever you write a story, you have an opening, you have the middle part, and then the end has to be the nail in the wood, or it has to be the best part of whatever show you're producing. You've got to close. You know, you've got an audience watching. You've got to close the episode where people are satisfied. And to me, I was just left hanging, you know. Beavis wants to go back to be his clumsy self so he could play with the kids and roll down the stairwell and then fall over. You know, that gave me a chuckle. But for him to go back and then just the episode to kind of fade into a little comic relief, if I could just get Rod Serling in alone in a room and just strangle his throat for a couple of minutes, that would have made me happy. Because, Rod, I work hard all day. I'm laboring. I'm beating myself. So when I get home, I get on the couch, I want to relax, I want to be entertained. I'm going to tune into your series, and I need some science fiction, because this is what it's being promoted as. It's the man's fears. It's man's imagination. It's the paranormal. It's the unusual. It's the strange. Rod, this episode could pass for the Jack Benny show. Rod, what are you doing to me? So, anyways, I'll say poor. Between poor, lousy. Somewhere in there, you know, if there's a scale. And also, one last comment is that if this comes on the Twilight Zone marathon, I refuse to even let my kids watch it. I refuse to let my grandchildren watch it. And I refuse to let my great-grandchildren watch this episode.
Okay. Ken, you're not going to let your dog watch it?
I don't know. I'll consider that. But who's next up in line? And whoever,
Robert.
You know, Robert is. All right, Robert.
Yeah.
You've got to give your honest feeling on this one. Don't beat around the bush. Give us your honest review, okay?
Okay. Yeah, I thought this was an okay episode. I give it 2.5. I give it about an average. It was just a regular Twilight Zone episode to me. I think just the fact that the actor Orson Bean was in this, I mean, he's a good actor. I mean, I've seen him on the Tell the Truth and other game shows. It's not the actor so much, I feel, as it is the script itself. It's just a basically humdrum script. And, you know, the angel, for example, is just helping him out because he owes his family a debt. And he feels that he needs to repay the debt, so... you know, he becomes his guardian and does a what-if with him, you know. Well, you know, things are looking bad and dull for you. Well, what if I did this for you and you know, change your life, make it better. But all in all, in the heart, inside of Beavis himself, you know, he just couldn't accept it. It wasn't him. He's, you know, different than what was being portrayed with the help of the angel. I mean, it was a better life, yes, but it wasn't being true to himself. I mean, you know, being something that he's not. Would he be miserable in his old life and then be more miserable with the life he was given? And that's pretty much what it came down to for him. And like I said, it's something later on in series and movies that, you know, they do what ifs situations with people. I got a couple examples that I brought. One is a movie that I kind of like. It has James Belushi and Linda Hamilton, called Mr. Destiny.
I gave Larry the chance to change his destiny. Now Larry's got everything a man could ever want, except the one thing that mattered most, the love he left behind.
James Belushi. I just want to be with you, like we were before.
And Michael Caine.
I guess it just wasn't meant to be.
It was meant to be.
Mr. Destiny.
In that movie, Michael Caine was kind of the angel that given him the choice of this alternate life, being this baseball star and what his life would be like with that. But the only problem was that the woman he loved in the original set, you know, didn't work out in what, you know, his destiny was changed to. Plus, he didn't like the person, what he became. So there again, like the Mr. Beavis episode, he switched it back to the way he originally was. Another
that was
one,
good movie.
Yeah, I like that one. I like Michael Caine in that. I really like that movie. And then
Michael Caine's good in anything.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, he's great in the Batman ones as the butler, and you know, in lots of movies. You know, he's been around for years. Another example I brought up is The Family Man. With Nicolas Cage and Tina Leone.
Jack Campbell thought he had everything.
Merry Christmas.
I'm giving everything I've got to this deal.
You're a credit to capitalism, Jack.
Then one day, his past caught up to him.
Kate Reynolds. She was my girlfriend in college. I almost married her.
But instead you left her.
I took the road less traveled.
And fate.
What?
Him?
Me.
Gave him a glimpse.
What do you need, Jack?
I got everything I need.
Yeah? You just remember that. You brought this on yourself.
At what his life could have been.
Kate?
Come on, Dad. Get up. It's Christmas. It's Christmas.
Jack.
Where's my Ferrari?
You got a Ferrari?
Just tell me what's happening to me.
This is a glimpse.
A glimpse of what?
This is not my beautiful house.
This is very strange because this isn't my house.
This is not my beautiful wife.
Those aren't my kids. Oh.
You're not really my dad, are you?
I don't have time for this. I'm in the middle of a deal.
Well, you're working on a new deal now, baby.
Good Lord. Do you know why I work here? Because you're the best damn tire guy in the state of New Jersey.
You must have needed this every day.
Yeah, you need it in Mad Wheels.
You want me.
That is the general idea.
Oh, God, you're beautiful.
How can you look at me like you haven't seen me every day for the last 13 years?
Jack! What's up? How you feeling, baby?
Can't keep coming in and out of people's lives, messing things up. It's not right.
I need you to remember me, Kate. Keep it with you no matter what happens.
Academy Award winner Nicolas Cage. The Family Man.
And with that, we get a similar situation as with Mr. Destiny, where he notices an old girlfriend and decides to change his destiny and see what it was like to, if he went left instead of right, to be with her, and ends up having kids and family. So that was just a couple examples I wanted to put in with kind of the Mr. Beavis situation. So, again, I give it a 2.5 out of 5. So I'll pass it over to Bobby. Bobby?
Thank you, Robert. Well, on my review, when we did it at the group on the board, I wrote, I'm not about to rehash the details that have already been given here. And so I'll stand by that. I'm not going to repeat any of this. I think we've already talked about it too much. It's totally trivial and meaningless, and the episode does absolutely nothing for me at all. But there, I mean, you have to face it, and even the best series do that. What really annoys me about all series, not just this one, is that when they have a common theme in the series that they've been successful with, at some point they decide that they've just either got to do a comedy episode or something that's sentimental or something that's out of character. I have no idea why. I've never understood that. Either they think the audience is getting bored or they have to prove that they can do something different. I don't know what the reason is, but I'm always irritated by that because I don't turn the Twilight Zone on to see this kind of story. If I want to see this, there's plenty of other junk there was back in 1960, and there still is, that you can go to see it. So that already bothers me. It's just not a story I would be interested in. And this is not an interesting character. I really don't care what happens to him at all. The other thing is that I bring a certain amount of prejudice to this, and that is the fact that I can't stand Orson Bean. I never could. I don't care what he's doing. I don't care if he's on a talk show or a game show or wherever. I've just never liked him. Now, I'm not saying he doesn't have any talent. I mean, I went to IMDb and ages ago, like back in the 50s or 60s, and nominated for a Tony Award for on Broadway for being in the play Subways Are for Sleeping. So he certainly has lasted. And to my great surprise, he's still around today. Just had his 82nd birthday a couple of weeks ago. Not only is he still around, but he's still acting. In the past year, he's been in 9 episodes of Desperate Housewives, which gives me another reason not to watch it. I wouldn't touch that series with a 10-foot pole anyway. But now he's in it. He's in it too. That makes it even less likely I'll go there.
Pardon me? I thought he was dead. I said, I thought he was dead.
I thought so too. No.
No. About three years ago, he was in an episode of 2 1/2 Men.
Now he's got a regular recurring part right now, 2009 to 2010 in Desperate Housewives. I might turn it on though just to see what he looks like these days. So I'll probably do that. And he's got a movie. He's got a movie coming out that's been completed called Ashley's Ashes. I don't know how big a part he plays in it, but I'll give him credit for that. Not, you know, in Hollywood, if you're 52, you're usually over the hill. So if you're still acting at 82, that's quite remarkable. But you have to give him credit for that. But I've never really liked him because he's one of those actors that doesn't do anything for me. He's just there. He's competent, but so what? I mean, I don't care whether he's around or not. The episode itself is just nothing. It's just boring. There's just nothing to it. And it's been done before on the Twilight Zone. It'll be done again. And all these episodes with guardian angels who try to change things for people, and you know, it gets boring after a while. We got the message that you should be happy with what you have, and you know, you'll find out in the end that no matter, even if you had nothing, you were probably happier that way. Everybody knows that.
Not necessarily.
Pardon me?
Not necessarily. Basically, okay. Rod will tell you that my series is a bunch of morality plays, whether they be science fiction oriented or comedy oriented, they are morality plays. You cannot change somebody unless they want to be changed. The angel tried to change Mr. Beavis into something he's not, never wanted to be, never will want to be. And yet it can't be done.
Well, I won't argue with any of that, but as a story itself, it simply did not interest me. And I don't care how much an anthology series is. I don't like comedy in the Twilight Zone. So they can do all the comedy they want to do, and it will never impress me. I simply am not interested. It just doesn't do anything for me.
So you're not looking forward to Carol Burnett then, huh?
That's even worse than this. I was on IMDb earlier today, and somebody said this is bad, but that's even worse, and I agree.
I forgot about that.
You know, it's hard to forget. So, and you know, I just
thought it was too slow. I thought it moved too slowly.
No. Well, it's just more interesting when it doesn't have to be science fiction or anything like that. It just has to be an interesting story, and I'm just not crazy about a story about one person who's rather trivial. If I lived in his apartment building, I would not pay any attention to him. I would just say, there goes that quirky, goofy little character again. I wouldn't really care what he's doing. I don't care what he does. So basically, that's about it. But, you know, I will give Orson Bean credit. I mean, 82 years old and still acting, my goodness. Just getting to 82 is amazing. But to still, you know, apparently he still has wits about him and still can act and remember lines. I mean, it's 9 episodes of Desperate Housewives. So that's I do admire him for that. You can't name many people in their 80s who have a recurring part in the series. There are some people half that age who are trying to get work. So, again, you got to give him that. But in this one, I'll simply pass on. I gave it, unlike Ken, who changes his rating on it every 10 minutes, I gave it a zero from the beginning, and I'm staying with it. I'm not giving it a two, a one, a three, a four. I mean, Ken can't make up his mind. But I've made up my mind. I think it stinks, period. All right, Lynn, you got it.
Okay. Now, Rick, did you have anything to say?
Basically, I kind of said what I had to before. But, yeah like I said, Rod would tell you that my series is not really science fiction. It's not comedy. It's a bunch of morality tales. This is what I wrote. And this is what this series is actually about.
So how would you rate it, Rick Wall?
Rate this episode?
Yeah, 1 to 5. Or 0, whichever.
Yeah, I'd probably give it a 3.
Yeah, and you're right about the morality series. You are right about that. I agree with you there. But, yeah, this episode, just for me, was a little bit too slow-moving. I mean, it was something that, it comes on, I'll watch it, but I don't go out of my way. I mean, if I have to leave the room for something, that's the one I leave the room storing, you know. But, that's about it for that.
So it's a morality series. So what? Star Trek was science fiction. It doesn't make every episode great. So what?
True.
No?
True.
Well, any series you have don't have great episodes. Some they do have great, and then others they have fillers where they just got to fill in to finish out the rest of the series. So, I mean, you run into that to any show.
Yeah, but the thing that really bothers me, guys, is I think the writers or the producers of any series tend to get lazy, and they don't put their best effort out. And I don't understand why, because you're investing a lot of money. And 36 episodes in season one, and I guess maybe about 10, maybe 10 to 12, maybe even 15 are just not really quality. And if you're going to, if I was on the board of directors and I was in the meeting room, I'm sure they had meetings before they produce the episode. They all got together and say, okay, guys, what shall we put out this week?
They did. It's called a production meeting.
Yeah, and you would think that they would have the best screenwriters, and if someone comes up with a script, you know, and there's 10 people in the room, you got to figure that 8 of them will say, what do you mean we're going to have a goofy guy that is sloppy, turns into clean, and then reverses back to sloppy, and we're going to put it into our series. I think it's laziness. I think it's not all the people on the board of directors really, like I said, giving the top quality effort.
Didn't Sterling write this episode?
There is no board of directors, okay? There is an executive producer. There is a producer, and there is a director. If the executive producer says, this is going to be the show, it's the show.
But okay? Rod Serling wrote this episode. He's too talented for this. So apparently he put the water on the boil, and in the 3 minutes
and he was also
for the water
the executive
to boil,
producer.
He decided to type this out. It took him no time at all, I'm sure.
Well, you don't have nobody to – I mean, he's the creator of the series. You don't have nobody who's going to outdo the creator of the series and say, no, you can't.
I said he's the executive producer.
Yeah. But he's got to present it to the CBS executives at the studio, right?
No.
To get their okay? He can't just produce an episode without their okay.
No, because once the series has been approved, that's up to him.
All an executive does, or especially back then, was buy the series. You never had studio interference like you do nowadays. Okay, I myself am a producer. I produce a low budget horror thing. I am the final word.
Yeah, but if there's something objectionable in a certain script, I'm sure the CBS executives don't want to be caught off guard and something is shown that's objectionable. So
well, that's what you got.
That's the censor's job.
And the script editor's job, too.
Not necessarily.
Yeah, that's just my main point, that you would think some executives review this episode and go, hey, Rod, I don't think so. Toss it in the trash can and give us something better. I would think that would happen once in a while, don't you think?
A good example is today's Doctor Who, like RTD, Stephen Moffat. Nobody's there to override Russell T. Davies when he did the series. If he did the scripts and he wrote them, that's what aired. And sometimes it kind of hurts because you need someone there to kind of rein them in and say, well, wait, let's look at this script. Maybe it's not going to work in this situation. If you're the sole producer and you write the story, you put it out there.
Okay, let me give you an example of a modern TV show. Anybody watch Babylon 5?
Yep, all 5 seasons.
Okay. There was a line in one of the episodes that J. Michael wanted to put in. And it was, from hell, from the gates of hell, I spit at thee. Okay? And all the Warner Brothers executives go, no. He goes, why not?
Yeah.
And they go, we're offended by it. And he goes, excuse me, did you ever read Herman Melville? And they went, who?
Mm-hmm.
Moby Dick? What? And he asked them, okay, what degrees did you get? I assume you guys went to college. What degrees did you get? Oh, we're MBAs.
Mm.
Okay. These people don't know classics? I mean, come on. Give me a break.
Who hasn't heard of Herman Melville? Come on.
And Ricardo Montalban said that line so well in Rafacon.
Yes. Just saying, you know, so I applaud people who stand up to, of course, it never got in the episode, but still, I applaud people who do that, being a producer myself, you
That's
know,
right.
who say.
That's right. Censorship is wrong.
Yeah.
But you're right. All right, folks, so I think we've done this one, and we're going to be back in a couple of weeks. It'll be my second show from my new digs in Seattle, Washington. Now that I'm here with Bobby and everything's been going great, so we're going to do our second show from here, and I'm hoping that everything goes well for the next one. I got to work out all these little glitches with my X-Lite and my Skype and my everything.
Well, we got the After Hours coming up, which is a better episode next
and
time.
And I love that episode, so I've got to have everything worked out by then. I've got 2 weeks to do it, so you know, Logan's trying to help me, and I just got to get it worked out. Oh, well, we'll see what happens. But, okay, folks, we'll see you in 2 weeks.
All right, good night, folks.
Right.
I got to take my doggy out.
Okay,
goodbye, everybody.
Well, we'll see you. Have a great time. We'll see you in 2 weeks.